Johnny Mac with your daily comedy news. Late Night had a lot of fun with Donald Trump's refusal to dispute that he told Mike Pence he could be a patriot or he could be a P-word on the morning of January 6th. Trevor Noah said, whoa, Trump is gangster. You know what I love about Trump is that even if he didn't say it, he's the kind of guy that pretend he said it just because it sounded cool. Yeah, that's a good line. I totally said it. Patriot or P-word. I love it. Trevor again. Also, I love how the reporter says, excuse my language, sir, as if Donald Trump is going to be offended. My man, it's Donald Trump. If anything, he'd be like, P-word, my favorite topic. Thank you for bringing this up. Let's talk about it. In case you're not following along, cat. Trevor, sometimes it's good to be a P-word. Oftentimes history is made by P-word. I mean, Gandhi, total P-word. Yes, Britain was like, are you going to fight us? Are you going to be a P-word? And Gandhi said, I am a P-word. You must be the P-word you wish to see in the world. This is what we need more of. Jimmy Kimmel, wonder if he tried to grab Mike Pence by the Patriot. Kimmel, Mike Pence now claims he has no problem at all with his former boss, so I guess Trump was right. The 9th annual Patrice O'Neill Comedy Benefit coming back in 2022. Bill Burr announced this on his socials. Pretty good lineup. Bill Burr, Pete Davidson, Chris DiStefano, Matteo Lane, Yamanika Saunders, Sherrod Small, Cypher Sounds, Mike Vecchione, Rich Voss, and Sal Vulcano. The show's January 18th at the New York City Center. Tickets on sale now. Speaking of Pete Davidson, he's been coming up a lot lately. He was on with Seth Meyers about a week ago, and he said, I've never felt less funny than he does when appearing on Saturday Night Live. You're surrounded by the funniest people all the time, you know? When I'm there, I'm just like, oh, I'm garbage. Because you watch Kate McKinnon, by the way, Pete, you're not watching Kate McKinnon. I don't know why we're pretending Kate McKinnon is on this season. Has anyone seen Kate McKinnon on Saturday Night Live this season? More people have seen Bob's Burgers, and we all know that show's a hoax. Kate is not on SNL. I don't know what Lorne Michaels is up to, but I digress. Pete Davidson said, because you watch Kate McKinnon or Chloe Fineman or Kenan Thompson do like 100 million things, and my line will be like, hey, everybody. That's kind of true. But it's just like, you know, I know my place. He said a lot of people hit him up for Taylor Swift tickets, and he just lied and said, they don't give me tickets because I cause problems. He added, what's sad is nobody ever questions that. Terry Hatcher is taking a turn at stand-up because why not? The Desperate Housewives veteran is one of several comedians featured in the Showtime Comedy Showcase, Even More Funny Women of a Certain Age, third in a series of specials. This airs Wednesday at 10 p.m. That's a big bar night, Showtime. We're all hanging out that night. Plus, it's trivia night. I don't know if I'm staying home to watch Terry Hatcher do stand-up comedy. No offense, anybody. This will be Hatcher's debut comedy special. Yeah. She's joined by comedy vets Carol Montgomery, Wendy Liebman, Monique Marvez, Leanne Lord, and Marsha Warfield discussing sex, dating, and copywriting rule of three, how they hilariously made it through the pandemic. From indie star Kurt Vonnegut made Lewis Black want to become a comedian. You didn't expect me to say that sentence. Now, Lewis Black will chair the Vonnegut Library. His term begins January 1st, lasts for a year. As chairperson, Lewis Black's responsibilities include ensuring fiscal responsibility, leading meetings virtually or in person, I wonder which he'll choose, and following the organization's strategic plan. The move also makes him a member of the governing board for 3 years. Lewis Black has been an honorary board member for almost 10 years, assisting with fundraising, promotion, and in copywriting rule of three, getting to know those behind the museum. The comedian first learned about the museum around a decade ago. A woman approached him, asked him to sign some books, and asked if he liked Vonnegut. He put down his pen and looked in her face. Of course I do. She asked if he'd like to be a member of the new organization creating the museum. Lewis Black said, yes, I wanted to be part of something that would tell the tale of someone who means so much to me. He became a Vonnegut fan as a young person working a summer job as a parking lot attendant. That left him a lot of time to read in between collecting money. He said that Vonnegut's world in Cat's Cradle changed him. Finally, I didn't feel so crazy anymore. He made me feel comfortable in what I thought was my madness. I immediately followed up by reading Sirens of Titan, and then whatever he wrote, I would read. He was my psychic roadmap. A lot of good buzz on Being the Ricardos. Variety wrote about it. Being the Ricardos centers on a single production week of I Love Lucy. That's the hit sitcom that ran for 6 years, ending in 1957. You've probably heard of it if you listen to this pod. In Being the Ricardos, we'll see flashbacks of the series throughout the film, as well as glimpses of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz's relationship in between. Nicole Kidman told the audience that while she loved Lucy, she didn't know the woman behind the lipstick. I fell in love with her as I was reading the script. I realized what she was doing was trailblazing for women. Being the Ricardos, December 10th in theaters and like 2 weeks later on Amazon. From Inside Hook, Porky's at 40, How a Teen Sex Comedy Briefly Conquered America. The writer writes, I'm 49, so this teen sex comedy was slightly before my time in puberty and not something I could ever catch late night on cable because I didn't have cable until college. The only thing I knew about the film was that there was a shower scene that involved peeping. I mean, it's part of the movie poster. And maybe a rotund guy named Porky. I'm trying to remember this movie. I don't remember anything but the shower scene either. The plot synopsis, set in 1954... A group of Florida high schoolers seek to lose their virginity. That was every movie in the 80s, I think, except Star Wars. Even Indiana Jones was about that, which leads them to seek revenge on a sleazy nightclub owner and his redneck sheriff brother for harassing them. There was always a redneck sheriff in every movie, including James Bond movies. That is not a joke. Look it up. There's a redneck sheriff in two Roger Moore films. Oddly, the sleazy nightclub only takes up about one-third of the film's 90-minute runtime. The rest of the flick is pretty much a bunch of horny dudes hanging out at the gym, badly hitting on or gawking at women, pulling various pranks, and surprise, learning a bit about anti-Semitism and family abuse. What? The anti-racism undertones here were a pleasant surprise. They were? Characters are called out for their narrow-minded views. Oh, now I understand. Okay, yes, yes, yes. Although that doesn't mean the very white male-centric cast is all that progressive. The boys peek in the women in the gym's locker rooms. While caught, there are a few consequences, and the camera certainly lingers. I guess the film gets some points for male nudity. Exploitation should be shared. There are some obvious issues here. Fat women are shamed. The one black character is hired for a prank to portray a deadly escaped convict. The police are pretty damn lenient towards these troublesome upper-class kids and actually unite with the teens against Porky, who, yeah, runs a sneezy nightclub, but also represents a working-class town. As a club owner, he only humiliates the main characters when they make unreasonable demands and drink underage in his establishment. I'm certainly not on Porky's side, but he does call out these entitled brats for coming to his neighborhood. It's a class thing. And sadly, the movie is certainly on the side of the white middle-class folk. I believe this film is presently owned by Howard Stern. Howard Stern bought it the rights when he was Howard Stern, not this imposter Howard Stern that's on Sirius these days, you know, the one that lives in the Hamptons with a second wife, not that guy. Back when Howard Stern was Howard Stern, pretty sure he bought the rights. Let's get out the Google. Howard Stern Porky's. From 2013, The Hollywood Reporter, is Howard Stern still interested in making the 1982 raunchy teen sex comedy Porky's? The Shock Jock's been interested in a long time, blah, blah, blah. In 2011, a lawsuit popped up that clouded the situation. Last week, the dispute was quietly put to bed. Skipping ahead a few paragraphs from 2013, Stern's agent has not responded to requests for clarification on whether Howard Stern's Porky's is still in development, but if we hear anything, we'll update. And 9 years have gone by and we haven't heard a thing. From the LA Times, why comedy podcasts are taking off at Audible. I told you the other day, Paul Lieberstein's Middle Space came out. Paul said there's an impatience in film and TV now. There's just a lot that has to happen. A lot of story needs to be told. I didn't have a story to tell. I just had some characters to play around with. In the podcast Audible world, people are more willing to accept a different way to go. The LA Times says scripted podcasts allow Audible to invest in stories that could be repurposed for other areas of Amazon, such as Amazon Prime Video. For example, Evil Eye began as a podcast on Audible in 2019, was later adapted into a horror movie that was released on Amazon Prime Video last year. The six new comedy podcasts are Middle Space, told you about that on Thursday's pod, Christmas Delivery, about a grumpy courier who goes on a Christmas Carol-esque journey, Self Center, featuring a 40-year-old woman whose weekend retreat goes awry, Lenma Can Help centers on a man with a popular advice show portrayed by Fred Armisen, Summer in Argyle, about a town in Ohio that is shaken after an athlete dies, and Bloodweed, which deals with a young cannabis business entrepreneur, voiced by the Sixth Sense actor Haley Joel Osment. Fred Armisen must be a really great guy, because he gets a lot of work. People who are good people get a lot of work. People who are jerky faces get less work. Audible is releasing most of these podcasts through partnerships with New York-based comedy production Above Average and its parent company, Broadway Video Enterprises. Whose company is that? Lorne Michaels. See? That's why Lorne is in the Comedy Power rankings. An Audible executive declined to disclose the budgets of its podcast. A person familiar with the company said the budgets can be in the high six figures depending on the cast. As a podcast executive myself, that sounds about right. Now, the problem, when you spend high six figures on a cast, it's hard to make that money back. That's why a lot of these things don't last. Sometimes I'll say something like, or we could go in the other room and just talk about basketball. That's a lot easier to produce. But it's cool things have aspirations. I digress. From the Moscow Times, your home for comedy news, in the loft of a trendy Moscow bar, stand-up comedian Pavel Dedishchev walks up to a microphone under a spotlight. I have 7 coronavirus antibodies. They all know each other. It's like a family living inside me, is his joke. Of course I know they're from the government. During his 40-minute performance, the bearded 30-year-old joked about corruption, the powerful Russian Orthodox Church, and the National Guard in the copywriting Rule of Three, a security force that has been at the forefront of suppressing protests. Dishev said Moscow's comedians began early this year seeing what they believe are security agents turning up at their shows. We started noticing it. We know they come and film things. We can't tell them to go away, so we accepted that as our most loyal audience. And that is your comedy news for today. Follow the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Good Pods, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.